it's not about you. It's not about you looking good at the recital. It is not about whether or not this student can keep up with your program. It's not about that. My motto in my studio is success is measured in smiles. All I want at the end of the day is for that student to walk out of my studio singing and dancing and happy.
You're watching Tim Topham TV, the piano teaching podcast, and this is episode number 57. Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode. Thank you very much for joining me again. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you're in the right place if you would like to improve your teaching. If you want to learn the best ways of doing things, if you want to learn from other teachers, presenters, authors, and people around the world who are making great changes in piano teaching, then you're listening to the right podcast. And all this month, we're talking about special needs teaching and giving you some ideas and strategies and ways to think about teaching these fantastic students. That can also be a bit of a challenge, particularly if you've received no training in it. And so today's guest is going to help you out with that. I know it's a great interview, and I really enjoyed meeting Susan Bassett. And we've called this episode Measuring Success in Smiles because that's the motto of her studio. Before we get stuck into today's episode, I want you to check out NovaScore. NovaScore is this month's sponsor, and it's the site I go to for online sheet music. The reason I like NovaScore and the reason I'm really happy that they're sponsoring is the fact that it's unlike any other online sheet music resource in that they have four adaptations of each song, including the original version where it's possible. So instead of just going once and finding something that's too hard for your student, you can actually go and find, well, here's a great piece. Oh, and there's actually three different levels below the original of simplicity. So oftentimes when we get a pop song that's too hard, jump on novascore.com, for example, and you'll be able to find an arrangement that not only sounds good, but is easy enough to play for your student. So do make sure you check them out. They're offering 30% off all of their sheet music for orders through timtopham.com. And all you have to do to find out more is head to the show notes page, which is timtopham.com/episode57. You'll find out all about it. You'll be able to browse their catalog, which includes recent hits, classical, pop, jazz, blues, gospel, church, movie soundtracks, Christmas. They've got everything, and it's growing all the time. And these arrangements that I've been talking about are actually created by pianists. So they're playable and they're readable, unlike half the stuff we download or that is available for download off the internet. This is actually written, properly arranged by pianists. It's 100% legal and copyright cleared and all that kind of stuff. And you can view it on any device and you can print it from any device. So make sure you check out novascore.com. And if you would like to get the discount code, head to timtopham.com/episode57. My guest today, Susan, is married with three sons and four grandchildren. She's been a teacher all her life. And in fact, I think this is an absolute first for the Tim Topham podcast. She taught for 10 years in the juvenile prison system, teaching maths, music, and science. I mean, there's, you know, the hardest teaching that would possibly go around, I imagine. So it probably has led her, and we have a bit of a joke about this, to being able to teach just about anything and anyone. She currently teaches in her piano studio at home. She began teaching special needs students in 2007. And at that time, how to do it advice was really hard to find. So she discovered what worked through trial and error, and she constantly searched for new ideas. And she's actually put together a website with completely 100% free resources for people who are interested in teaching special needs students and would like some guidance and some ideas of how to do it. So Susan's website is pianoforspecialneeds.com. We'll talk more about that later. And again, if you'd like to check out the show notes or grab your NovaScore coupon, head to timtopham.com/episode57. And now it's over to my interview with Susan, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, Susan, welcome to the show today.
Okay, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So look, could you give us a little bit of about your background and how you came to be doing this work with special needs music education?
Okay, first of all, I've always been drawn to the atypical student. When I lived in California, I worked in the juvenile prison system teaching music, math, and science. And then I retired and came out to Virginia and opened up a small piano studio. And one day, I got a call, and the lady said that her granddaughter has autism. Would you teach her piano? And I said, I don't know anything about autism, but I'm game if you're game. So we set up an appointment, we set up lessons, and I immediately went to the internet. I went to the library. I talked to people trying to find out information. How do I teach music to an autistic student? And I couldn't find anything. And so I started the lessons, and I did the tried and true of trying something and see if it works. And some things worked and some things didn't. And what the website is I gathered the things that worked and tried to make a series of lessons out of them that would apply to other people.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So just going back, you worked in the prison system in education. So you were teaching adults or juveniles?
No, this is juvenile. This is juvenile.
Wow. And how many years did you do that for?
10.
Wow. That must have been an extraordinary experience.
That's where I got my gray hair.
Oh, goodness me. And you were teaching math, science, and music,
yes. And that's where I came up with some of my philosophies of instant gratification. Because when you're working with these students, I mean, there's no such thing as going back to the dorm and practicing. You have to work. You have to give them an idea, do the idea, and then they have to have immediate. There has to be an immediate show, a reward for their efforts.
Yeah.
Or it doesn't work. So anyway.
So are you teaching one-on-one in the music situation or classroom?
Well, it's music. And I had a class of 15, and what you do is you give them a written assignment, and then I had 4 to 6 pianos around the room. Then I would give them assignments, and then I would go from one student to the other to see how they're doing.
Wow. And I would I be right in thinking the majority were boys?
Yeah, I was in the boys' school. They did have some girl classrooms, but I had 3 sons, and I just worked well with boys.
Yeah. Wow, what an amazing experience. Fascinating background.
Out top broad, so no one has
to. So it doesn't surprise me that when someone came to you and said, hey, I've got a student who has autism, would you mind teaching that? You're like, yeah, well, I've worked in a prison. Why not give it a shot? Yeah. That's great. Okay, and so you've put together a website, and this is how I actually found you. When I started thinking about the special needs teaching area for the theme this month, I did a whole lot of research online, and yours was one of the websites that came up. And so tell us a little bit about what people will find, and we'll talk more about the website a little bit later on and give the address, but what would people find? What have you put together there?
Well, the reason I put together the website is that as I was working with a student, I thought, there are a lot of autistic students out there, and I learned that there's not many resources for them. When I went looking for ideas on how to teach them, there was nothing that I found. And I don't think it was only because of my poor research skills, you know, internet research skills. I don't think there's anything out there, because I was just on the internet earlier today looking for ideas for teaching piano to special needs students, and there's nothing there that I was able to unearth. And so I thought, all right, let me put something together that will work. And so I took all of the ideas that worked with this particular student, and meanwhile I cast about and found other special needs students. One of them has cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, more autism, and I don't remember what else. I have since acquired a traumatic brain TBI, traumatic brain injury student. And so I'm just trying the different ideas on them. And so I wrote out a curriculum, and I have on the internet, I have 2 4 lesson units. Each lesson is broken into 3 parts of 10 minutes, because I figure that's about all the attention span that these students have. And also when they're working with them, there has to be an assistant, and the unit would be started and stopped and started and stopped. So a 10-minute unit could very well take 15, 20 minutes. Mm. So if you go to the website, what you will find is you will find these segments broken down. And also, I have written, I have this download stuff where these download units, and you get, let's see if I can show, shows any of this on the thing.
Yep.
It gets the agenda, and it talks about what I'm going to be doing in part A, which is less, you know, first part, part B and part C. And then I also have a tips for instruction for the caregiver, because the students are not going to be independent. And then I have, let's see, the different pages that you will need for the lesson.
And so it's for a piano teacher could use that and learn from it, but it's also designed that a parent or a caregiver could help a child learn at
yes,
home.
Yes, you don't need to know anything about music, anything at all about music. The way it's set up is that I'm looking into the camera and I'm talking directly to the student. And I say, okay, and I have a view of the piano. I say, okay, place your hands here. And the caregiver would have to probably stop the lesson, make sure the hands are in position and get it going again. Now, the caregiver could be the parent. This is not a babysitting unit.
Mm.
Student has to have guidance, but the guidance does not need to be the parent. Let's say the caregiver needs to take a nap. And so the she could hire the teenager down the street. You know, anybody who is a typical student who can read and write and follow directions can guide the student, the target student, through this. And the benefit is the helper will also learn how to read music.
Mm, that's great. So, when I started exploring your site, I loved the fact that, you know, you don't claim any PhDs in this area or anything like that. You just have a huge amount of experience and you've gone, you know what, there's nothing out there. I would like to help other people with this. Here's how I do it. And to put all this information up on your website, I think is just brilliant. So thank you from all of the teachers out there, because I think we can learn a huge amount from you.
Thank you.
When you started, you said you did a lot of trial and error just to see what works, I think was what you said. Can you remember some of the things that didn't work before we talk about all the great stuff to do? Can you remember some of the mistakes you made?
The first thing that you do wrong is you talk too much. Autistic students do not process language. And so if you're trying to tell them what to do, they're not going to understand. It's best for you to just say, do this, and model it. Because if you talk too much, you're going to lose them, absolutely guaranteed. And let's see.
And let's face it, all teachers, music teachers, we all talk too much.
We all talk too much. In fact, I was reminded of that this last week. I have when my student came and I didn't think that he could read music at all. And I had some music up on the rack and I was talking to the mother. I don't know what we were talking about, maybe scheduling for the month or something like that. And all of a sudden, the young man started playing the song. Now, I didn't realize he could read the music and play that song. But it turns out that if I keep my mouth shut, he does a whole lot better.
It just happens. Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yes. So the biggest thing that you're going to do is to talk too much. The other thing that I learned is that autistic students, especially the autistic students, they can't stand loud noises. Well, I get excited. You're going to find this out in our interview. I get excited. I talk loud. If you do something fine, I'm going to say, yay, that's wonderful. I'm so proud of you. Well, they can't take the sound.
Yeah.
They can't take the volume. So I've learned not to do that. And let's see. There are other things that you learned. You learn what you can and cannot wear. For instance, I could not wear this in a lesson because it's too bright.
Right.
It's distracting. And I would not wear the necklace because it might become attractive to take it.
To pull it or something. Yeah. Yeah.
Take off.
Yeah.
I don't wear blouses with flowers because sometimes a student will want to pick the flowers. And I'm at school. I don't want that.
And of course, this is, obviously different students at different levels on the spectrum will all be different. But I think, as you say, distraction, loud noise, I've heard these things from other people as well. So definitely worth keeping in mind.
Yes, and patience. You have to have patience.
Oh, yes.
You have to have patience. If you say something, it could take them very well 30 seconds to process it and produce an answer. And I think that's where my background or my, how do I say, lack of education or lack of credentials comes in mind. Because if someone has written a PhD on the ornamentation of Bach, you know, Bach ornaments, they're not going to want to sit there for 30 seconds while some student comes up. You know, you say, what's the name of this note? And it takes 30 seconds for the student to come up with E. So I think that I come with more patience.
Yeah.
And the ones that come with more credentials or certificates.
Yeah. It was interesting too, just talking about the time things take. I remember when I was talking to Scott Price in episode 56 about this, we both agreed that we've got to give ourselves permission as teachers of special needs students to not make much progress for weeks or even longer, or not feel like you're making any progress, but perhaps things are happening. And suddenly you have sudden breakthroughs and things like that. Have you experienced that in your studio?
Well, I have, but I think that there's a principle that's even more important than that. It's not about you. It's not about you looking good at the recital. It is not about whether or not this student can keep up with your program. It's not about that. My motto in my studio is success is measured in smiles. All I want at the end of the day is for that student to walk out of my studio singing and dancing and happy. Because these students have so little opportunity. Of course, the ones that are in school, the schools in America do provide, they're required to provide a lot of assistance. But some of my students are adults now. They're young adults now. They have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to go. And I was planning to retire at the beginning of the summer. And one of the mothers came to me and said, oh, please don't, because my son has nowhere else to go. He has nothing else to do. And some of these students are just so isolated because they don't talk. They don't fit into society. There's nothing for them to do but sit around the house and do what? And so you can't, it's not about you. It's not about your program. It's not about have they learned what I want them to learn so that they will have achieved this by the end of the class. That's not the purpose of these lessons. The purpose of these lessons is to make the student feel good and to impart and to give self-esteem. And that is your only goal. Now, I do it through music. And if I had, now, I've got this one student, I've been trying to teach him for 4 years at Middle C. He's the guy in the middle with the line through his head. Okay, now I have to say that intellectually, 4 years on Middle C can be a bit much. But, you know, he loves his lessons. He loves his lessons. He has nowhere else to go. And he goes home, they set the keyboard up and they start playing, and praise God, I have done what I need to do. I have given this young man something that he enjoys doing that without me, he wouldn't have it.
I love your motto, Susan, that measured in smiles. It's absolutely brilliant. And isn't that what we should be aiming for with all our teaching, really?
Yes.
But particularly in this area. It's really lovely to hear. Okay, so let's move on and talk about some of your best tips for working, particularly with autism. Let's talk about that for a moment.
Well, first of all, I don't distinguish between autism and the other cognitive disorders.
Okay.
Because, I mean, from my experience, now the experts with the PhDs, perhaps they do, but from my experience, I don't. There is a difference between those with physical disabilities. For instance, students with autism, Down syndrome, and TBI, traumatic brain injury, you have to use very limited vocabulary. You have to speak slowly and distinctly, and you have to repeat yourself. If they didn't get it the first time, don't go changing the phrases or the sentences. It has to be an exact repeat. Now, my honor student with cerebral palsy, her brain works just fine. She understands jokes. She understands nuances. She understands sarcasm, or I would just say jokes. It's the fact that she knows what to do. It's just sometimes your fingers will or they won't. And so it's been for her, it's just been a real joy for me, because when she first entered the program, she had two fingers that may or may not would get to the right key, you know, given the amount of time. And now she has all 10 fingers that work.
Oh, wow.
That's just amazing. All 10 fingers work. Now, maybe there's a little bit of maturity time in grade, because I've been working with her for 3 years. And in the past week, because of something I discovered, I'll tell you in a minute, she's been catching on to rhythm. And so her notes, you know, sometimes she can get to the right notes eventually, but there's no timing, there's no rhythm, there's no flow. And one of the things that I've just discovered, I forgot what you exactly asked me about.
That's all right. Tell me the story. I'm interested to hear what got a grooving.
We got a groove going. This is a kazoo.
Oh, yeah.
I had to have the kids show me how it works. my TBI student used to play the trombone, and he very much wants to get back to playing the trombone, but he can't control his mouth. And so I had the idea that let's start with a kazoo and see whether or not we could get him to focus his attention and his purpose on the aperture.
Mm-hmm.
Again, not knowing if this was correct by research, or what do they call it? Research-based lesson plans. Yep. Or something. It's an idea that I had. So I went out and I got a kazoo, and I got one for each of my students, and we started playing the kazoo, and they're so much fun. They are so much fun. And this one boy, different one, who could not count. A lot of times they can't count. You know, you say, okay, let's count to four. One, two, ready, go. And you get.
Yeah.
Okay, they can't. Well, we got the kazoo. I said, Mary had. Okay, now you play the kazoo, right? Mary had a toot, toot, toot. And after about three renditions of this song, they were starting to come in on time. Amen. I mean, it's just amazing. Just amazing. And I'm thinking, oh, how does that work? And so then I've heard, I've just discovered the technique of a phrase completion, where you say, Mary had a, and then the student just has to say, little lamb. And I had an autistic student who hasn't spoken 10 words to me in 2 years. He's saying, all of Mary had a little lamb, plus where is Thumbkin? Okay. And all this started with the kazoo.
Isn't that amazing? There you go. It's why I like, not long ago we had a session on ORF with Vashti Somerville. It's a really popular podcast a couple of months back. And she was showing the way that just taking kids away from the keyboard and using hammers, even if it's on a keyboard instrument, but using mallets, there's just something about it. They don't have to worry about using the right finger shape and all this kind of stuff. I think maybe it's in some ways similar to, you know, just blowing on a kazoo in time or clapping or doing something that's away from the keyboard. I think it's so important for connecting with lots of students, perhaps more so with special needs students.
Yeah, I think that's very important. After we did, I had one student this week play a song. It was out of time. You know, he was not hitting the right notes. The timing was terrible. And so I said, all right, pull out your kazoo. Let's play this. And so I was playing on the piano. I was playing on the piano. And then together we were going whatever the song was. He was playing on the kazoo. I was playing on the kazoo. And then, let's see, after I played it on the piano, then we did just the kazoo. And then I said, okay, now you play it on the piano. He hit all the right notes and had all the right rhythms.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And today I was listening to your podcast from the lady who talked about the Suzuki method.
Mm.
And I thought, okay, because I get ideas where I find them. Okay.
Me too.
Wherever I find them. And that idea was on today's podcast or the podcast I found today. And it said that, like, when you're teaching a baby language, You do not ask the baby to read before the baby can speak. You teach the baby to speak and you have repetition. And this constant repetition, and the child knows what the thing sounds like before they even try to wrap their mouth around it. Mm. And so when you do this with the students, doesn't it just make sense that you would have the student know what is supposed to sound like, and then they can get their hands on the keys?
Cool. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's exactly the music learning theory approach too. And we focused on that from episode 48 through to 51 was all about music learning theory. Exactly the same thing. Dr. Mm-hmm. Gordon's view that, yes, you learn by speaking and listening first, learning a vocabulary, and then you might start reading and writing later on. I think it's great. We should all at least consider that in our teaching. I think you mentioned earlier on that you've got some experience with Down syndrome students.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is there an approach there that you take that's a little bit different?
No, I don't. With the cognitive disabilities, so far I have discovered that what works with the Down syndrome student will work with the autistic student and with the TBI student. And sometimes I'll be researching or trying something or trying out new ideas, and I get all excited. So I try it with all of them, and they all have a wonderful time. They all just have a really, really wonderful time. In fact, then I transfer it over to my typical students, the ones that are in, elementary school, grade appropriate elementary school. And the thing is, we have so much fun. Mm. We have so much fun. And if you're not having fun, why do it?
Yeah, agreed.
My students are not going, we will never explore the nuances of a Mozart phrase. It will not happen. Mm. Okay, these are not serious students. I wouldn't be the appropriate teacher for that. I'm here to have fun. I'm here to have the student have fun. And so the things that I come up with, I just try different things. I listen to different people. I've just discovered this wonderful lady. She's in Canada. Her name is Kristen Jensen.
Yes, I've heard of Kristen.
Kristen at eartrainingandimprov.com. Well, I stumbled across her and decided, okay, I'll try out some of her ideas. Mm-hmm. Now, one of them was, just do a duet. And this particular autistic student I've had him for 2 years. I can't reach him. I can't unlock the key to whatever turns him on. And I've tried everything I can. Some days I have more success than others, but nothing's really turned him on. So I was trying one of Kristen's ideas. She was using a black note duet, but the student wanted to play on the white note. So, hey, I'm easy. So just drop down F, D, B flat, C, which of course is six, four, five. Okay. His eyes lit up, and I did it again. And he looked at that, and he was so excited about it. He played that all the way up and down the keyboard.
Right.
And it just turned him on. It just completely turned him on. And it's, he's been on for 2 weeks now. We'll see. I mean, there's no guarantees about what's going to happen the next time I see him. Of course, the next step obviously is, well, he was playing the left hand. He was playing the bass line. And then I tried to jam on the right hand just to see what happens. And that was a little bit too confusing. Mm. That was a little bit too confusing. So I dropped back to, just to
say a rhythm on a note. Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it's great. It just goes to show how creative you need to be. I think you use the word patient, flexible, yes, patient, and creative, really, to have success in this area, don't you? And you've got to be willing to give anything a go and have some epic fails and not get anywhere sometimes. And
there are days where you leave and you think, what is that lady paying me for?
That's right.
But she does.
Mm. And the students are obviously having fantastic times and experiences. And, as you say, I like this word. I'm sure it might not be the scientific word, but unlocking, I think, or turning on the student. It's like a switch. Something is suddenly allows them to come out of themselves. It's brilliant.
You have this wonderful child of God, and he's locked in this problem. And the person is still a wonderful person. I think of Stephen Hawking. Okay. He's a brilliant man who's trapped in a body, okay, that doesn't work. And I look on my students that way as just being these wonderful, well, Down syndrome students are angels. There's no other way of explaining it. There's nothing evil about them. There's no duplicity. There's no greed. There's no, they don't lie. They don't know how. They're angels. And it's just to enter in and think, okay, now, how can I communicate with this student? How can I make this student want to talk to me? Or music is magic. Okay. And we're just discovering now that music will enter the brain and affect the brain in ways that we've never thought of before. And my TBI student came out of his coma to music.
Wow.
And you just hear this all the time where the student was given up for dead. You know, the doctor said, well, okay, he's not going to survive this accident. Well, you don't tell that to the mother. So they're around the bedside all the time, singing to him and playing. Well, in their house, it was Christian music. So they're playing this, and lo and behold, he came out of his coma. Well, he'd always be a vegetable. Then after that, he'd never be able to speak. Well, he started speaking. Mm. Well, then he'd never be able to do this. Well, he started doing that. And it's the music.
Mm.
And he's not the only one. You start searching into TBI, and you'll see that music, it ministers, it mends, and it's magic. It just does it. And so I'm trying to get music into the brain.
Mm.
I don't know what's going on. You know, I'm not studied. All I know is that music is magic, and this is a gift that I want to give them.
Mm.
I want to give them the gift of music and the joy of success through music.
TBI, just to clarify, traumatic brain injury. So this is a person who's normally functioning but has an accident of some sort. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Who's had the student that I have in my house had a motocross accident. The one that I met in New York had an automobile accident. And yes, yes, yeah. They're normal functioning adults or children, and then something happens. It's a traumatic injury. And so the thing then is to retrain a different part of the brain to take over.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, it's just the brain is amazing. The brain is just an amazing thing, and we know so little about it. And music is magic.
I love you. You've got some great little mottos. I really enjoy listening to them. What I should have asked you before, but what does your studio actually look like today with the numbers of students and ages and things like that?
I don't have many. I tried to retire in May. Last November, my husband had a severe heart attack, and I thought, okay, I'm also a senior.
Right.
And I'm thinking, I'm not going to teach forever. And then he had the heart attack, and you have a reevaluation of all your life's priorities. And so I figured, all right, I'll give up teaching. And then he started getting better, and then I started feeling better. And so I only have 8 students, I think,
mm-hmm.
only about 8 students. And that's enough for me because I'm trying to retire.
Yeah.
But I'm not trying to retire. I'm finding new things like we should have a Special Olympics music recital. You
know? Yeah.
Because where can these kids go? Where can these kids go to shine?
Mm.
You know,
well, Susan, you certainly have no shortage of innovative ideas and passion to keep learning. I think it would be an absolute shame if you did retire completely. Keep it up. It's amazing the work that you're doing. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, as you can see, I get turned on when I talked about teaching, and you know, you find a new idea, and I can think of different things I'd like to do on the website, but I'm computer challenged, and
well,
what's there is a limit of my skills.
Yeah. Well, look, on that, I wanted to get to your website because, as we've said, there aren't many resources out there for piano teaching and special needs students. And what I couldn't believe yours is that it's actually all free, or seems to be free. Am I right?
It is. It is. I only have 2 units written, and before I wrote another one, because you know, it's t- takes an effort to do that.
Absolutely.
Wanted to see what kind of market there was out there or interest. Mm. And I wasn't getting a whole lot. So I thought, all right, so that was an idea that wasn't meant to be. But I continue to have a trickle of interest. And if anyone were to, if I had parents contact me or caregivers contact me and saying, you know, we've walked through the first two and my student is ready to learn to actually read, that I would sit down and I would write another unit.
Mm.
But yeah, I have ideas. I'd like it to be like a one-stop shop for tricks that work. Things yeah. that, you know, I recently discovered MIT, music intonation therapy, where that's how you can get students to talk as you sing the words to them and then you sing them back.
Music and, intonation therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or maybe it's melodic. Maybe it could be melodic.
Okay.
MIT, melodic intonation therapy, where like you say, thank you. And they were the thank you. They were recommending the minor third interval or something. There's something about the minor third interval that's, you know, na 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 na.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of built in us somehow.
Yeah. It's built in us somehow. And yeah. So. That's supposed to help students help the what's it called, aphasia, when they don't speak, to get them just to talking. And yeah. I'd like to explore that, but, you know, I have to see what kind of interest is out there. I'm not going to do it just for
you. Yeah, well, look, I hope you do keep doing what you're doing, because I know there is lots of interest, because I get asked questions about this all the time. And like you, I'm not an expert, and I don't have nearly the experience that you do either, which is why I've wanted to speak with someone like you. And in a couple of weeks, I'm actually interviewing a clinical psychologist about autism, in fact, so we can get that side of the view. So we've got the practical, the piano teaching, the actual psychology. And I think just having information out there, Susan, is so valuable to teachers. So thank you very much for what you've done and for making it freely accessible. I think it's just brilliant. Where do people go to find that information?
The website is pianoforspecialneeds.com.
Great.
That's it. Just yep. Piano for Special Needs.
We'll pop a link to that in the show notes. And I just thoroughly encourage anyone to go there. And I went and had a good look through and watched some of your videos and things. And as you say, you speak to the camera as if you're speaking to the child. So I would hate for teachers to kind of go there and go, actually, this isn't for me. This is for parents or caregivers. But actually, you can learn so much by the things that you're doing. And that's what I would encourage teachers who are listening and watching this podcast to go and do. Go and watch how you've put together your curriculum and see what bits you can take from Susan and use for your own teaching, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Now, before we finish up, was there anything else that we've kind of missed out on talking about today that you think is important, or any other tricks or tips that you might have in your head?
The most important thing is that you have fun with your students.
Mm.
Remember back when we were taking piano as a kid, the idea of having fun just never entered anybody's mind. It's not why you sign up for piano lessons. You sign up for piano lessons to learn piano. But you should be having fun. If you're not having fun, don't do it.
Gosh, I hope that's not the case anymore. I really do hope that's changing.
And I always look for ways of instant gratification, which is why I was starting in on this improvisation. And instant gratification is also in the book that I use in the I Can Do It method, because the book is lettered. The songs are lettered. These are nursery rhymes that all the kids know.
Mm.
And they're lettered. Here we go. So then there's a thing that you put a keyboard, which lets them know where they are. And that means that on the first lesson, the students can play a song.
Mm.
Instant gratification, I think, is very important.
And just sorry, before you go on, that book that you just showed us, is that one of your resources or another book?
Yes. This is, in order to do my program, you need three things. You need a keyboard, and you need a computer, obviously.
Mm.
And you need this book called I Can Do It. And you can get this at kpocpress.com.
Okay, so how do you spell that? K-P-O-C-K.
K-P-O-K.
K-P-O-K. Okay, great.
And this is written by a friend of mine, Christine Krill. And I bought it just because she was a friend of mine. And I put all of my students through it, including the grandmothers. Because, first of all, you can play it the very first day. And secondly, it has all the nursery rhymes. So even if they decide they're not going to play, they play it for their grandchildren.
Mm.
You can have one lesson and go home and play these songs for your grandchildren. Instant gratification.
Mm. Brilliant.
And so let's see. The other thing that I was thinking of using these lessons for, not only with children, but I could also envision, say, using these with grandma. You know, maybe grandma's failing and you can get a, let's just say a granddaughter, not that it has to be a girl, but you can get your granddaughter there and they, you know, the young and the old ladies can learn how to play piano.
Mm.
Grandma doesn't care what she does. She just wants to be having fun with her grandchild.
Yeah. So the videos that you've created, you're saying they can be used by anyone, really.
Anyone.
It's just a very clear, steady paced process that can introduce someone to the piano.
Yes. And actually that's one of the marketing problems I have with it, because when you're working with autism students, you can't have distractions. You can't have dancing cartoons and music and stuff like that. It has to be slow and steady.
And clear. Yeah.
I do
notice, like, for teachers who are interested, I'm sure we can learn from how you present to the camera too, and the words that you use and the way you speak, because it is particularly clear and steady, and it's very calm. So there's lots to learn from you, I think, Susan. You've done a great job.
Thank you.
And I know how long it takes to put video courses together.
Yes, particularly, I'm supposed
to. Yeah, with PDFs and everything. So it's just brilliant. And to just offer it to people for free is just a fabulous community program that you've put together. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tim.
It's great. Well, look, we'll sign off there. I do appreciate your time and all that you're doing. And perhaps if people have some questions for you and they can head to the show notes page, write a question, I might just send it through to you. Would you be happy to jump on and give some people some support if they have it?
I would. Yes, I would.
That'd be fantastic. All right. So Susan's website is pianoforspecialneeds.com. Make sure you check it out. She's done so much work there. It's just great. We'll look forward to keeping in touch with you.
Thank you, Tim.
All right. See you later, Susan.
Okay, bye.
If the idea of a piano teacher's community where you get to access the best educational resources, rub shoulders with expert teachers from around the world, and have immediate access to feedback for any of your questions, then Inner Circle membership is for you. The Inner Circle is my private community of piano teachers from across the globe who share a commitment to creating and delivering the most inspiring, modern, and progressive learning experiences for their students. Membership is now open, so head to timtopham.com/community to find out more and get involved today. I can't wait to see you on the inside.